Two. I have hitherto not had occasion to describe his appearance. He was a tall man of 33, and well-fed, as the common folk express it, almost fat, with lank flaxen hair, and with features which might be called handsome. He had retired from the service with the rank of colonel, and if he had served till he reached the rank of general, he would have been even more impressive in that position, and would very likely have become an excellent fighting general. I must add, as characteristic of the man, that the chief cause of his leaving the army was the thought of the family disgrace which had haunted him so painfully since the insult paid to his father by Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch 4 years before at the club. He conscientiously considered it dishonourable to remain in the service, and was inwardly persuaded that he was contaminating the regiment and his companions, although they knew nothing of the incident. It's true that he had once before been disposed to leave the army long before the insult to his father, and on quite other grounds, but he had hesitated. Strange as it is to write, the original design, or rather desire, to leave the army was due to the proclamation of the 19th of February of the emancipation of the serfs. Gaganov, who was one of the richest landowners in the province, and who had not lost very much by the emancipation, and was, moreover, quite capable of understanding the humanity of the reform and its economic advantages, suddenly felt himself personally insulted by the proclamation. It was something unconscious, a feeling, but was all the stronger for being unrecognized. He could not bring himself, however, to take any decisive step till his father's death, but he began to be well known for his gentlemanly ideas to many persons of high position in Petersburg, with whom he strenuously kept up connections. He was secretive and self-contained. Another characteristic. He belonged to that strange section of the nobility still surviving in Russia, who set an extreme value on their pure and ancient lineage and take it too seriously. At the same time, he could not endure Russian history, and indeed looked upon Russian customs in general as more or less piggish. Even in his childhood, in the special military school for the sons of particularly wealthy and distinguished families in which he had the privilege of being educated, from first to last certain poetic notions were deeply rooted in his mind. He loved castles, chivalry, all the theatrical part of it. He was ready to cry with shame that in the days of the Moscow Tsars the sovereign had the right to inflict corporal punishment on the Russian boyars, and blushed at the contrast. This stiff and extremely severe man, who had a remarkable knowledge of military science and performed his duties admirably, was at heart a dreamer. It was said that he could speak at meetings and had the gift of language, but at no time during the 33 years of his life had he spoken. Even in the distinguished circles in Petersburg in which he had moved of late, he behaved with extraordinary haughtiness. His meeting in Petersburg with Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, who had just returned from abroad, almost sent him out of his mind. At the present moment, standing at the barrier, he was terribly uneasy. He kept imagining that the duel would somehow not come off. The least delay threw him into a tremor. There was an expression of anguish in his face when Kirillov, instead of giving the signal for them to fire, began suddenly speaking, only for form, indeed, as he explained himself aloud. "Simply as a formality. Now that you have the pistols in your hands and I must give the signal, I ask you for the last time. Will you not be reconciled? It's the duty of a second." As though to spite him, Mavriky Nikolaevich, who had till then kept silence, although he had been reproaching himself all day for his compliance and acquiescence, suddenly caught up Kirillov's thought and began to speak. "I entirely agree with Mr. Kirillov's words. This idea that reconciliation is impossible at the barrier is a prejudice only suitable for Frenchmen. Besides, with your leave, I don't understand what the offence is. I've been wanting to say so for a long time, because every apology is offered, isn't it?" He flushed all over. He had rarely spoken so much and with such excitement. I repeat again my offer to make every possible apology, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch interposed hurriedly.
This is impossible,
shouted Gaganov furiously, addressing Mavriky Nikolaevich and stamping with rage.
Explain to this man,
he pointed with his pistol at Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, if you are my second and not my enemy, Mavriky Nikolaevich,
that such overtures only aggravate the insult. He feels it impossible to be insulted by me. He feels it no disgrace to walk away from me at the barrier. What does he take me for after that, do you think? And you, my second, too, you're simply irritating me that I may miss.
He stamped again. There were flecks of foam on his lips.
Negotiations are over. I beg you to listen to the signal, Kirillov shouted at the top of his voice. One, two, three.
At the word three, the combatants took aim at one another. Gaganov at once raised his pistol, and at the fifth or sixth step he fired. For a second he stood still, and, making sure that he had missed, advanced to the barrier. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch advanced too, raising his pistol, but somehow holding it very high, and fired almost without taking aim. Then he took out his handkerchief and bound it round the little finger of his right hand. Only then they saw that Gaganov had not missed him completely, but the bullet had only grazed the fleshy part of his finger without touching the bone. It was only a slight scratch. Kirillov at once announced that the duel would go on, unless the combatants were satisfied.
"I declare," said Gaganov hoarsely.
His throat felt parched, again addressing Mavriky Nikolaevich.
"That this man..."
Again he pointed in Stavrogin's direction.
"Fired in the air on purpose, intentionally. This is an insult again. He wants to make the duel impossible."
"I have the right to fire as I like, so long as I keep the rules," Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch asserted resolutely.
"No, he hasn't. Explain it to him. Explain it,"
cried Gaganov.
"I'm in complete agreement with Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch," proclaimed Kirillov.
"Why does he spare me?"
Gaganov raged, not hearing him.
"I despise his mercy. I spit on it.
I give you my word that I did not intend to insult you," cried Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch impatiently. "I shot high because I don't want to kill anyone else, either you or anyone else. It's nothing to do with you personally. It's true that I don't consider myself insulted, and I'm sorry that angers you, but I don't allow anyone to interfere with my rights."
"If he's so afraid of bloodshed, ask him why he challenged me,"
yelled Gaganov, still addressing Mavriky Nikolaevich.
"How could he help challenging you?" said Kirillov, intervening. "You wouldn't listen to anything. How is one to get rid of you?"
"I'll only mention one thing," observed Mavriky Nikolaevich, pondering the matter with painful effort. "If a combatant declares beforehand that he will fire in the air, the duel certainly cannot go on, for obvious and delicate reasons."
"I haven't declared that I'll fire in the air every time," cried Stavrogin, losing all patience. "You don't know what's in my mind, or how I intend to fire again. I'm not restricting the duel at all."
"In that case, the encounter can go on," said Mavriky Nikolaevich to Gaganov.
"Gentlemen, take your places," Kirillov commanded.
Again they advanced. Again Gaganov missed, and Stavrogin fired into the air. There might have been a dispute as to his firing into the air. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch might have flatly declared that he'd fired properly, if he had not admitted that he had missed intentionally. He did not aim straight at the sky or at the trees, but seemed to aim at his adversary, though as he pointed the pistol, the bullet flew a yard above his hat. The second time the shot was even lower, even less like an intentional miss. Nothing would have convinced Gaganov now.
"Again,"
he muttered, grinding his teeth.
"No matter. I've been challenged, and I'll make use of my rights. I'll fire a third time, whatever happens."
"You have full right to do so,"
Kirillov rapped out. Mavriky Nikolaevich said nothing. The opponents were placed a third time.
The signal was given. This time, Gaganov went right up to the barrier, and began from there taking aim at a distance of 12 paces. His hand was trembling too much to take good aim. Stavrogin stood with his pistol lowered, and awaited his shot without moving.
"Too long! You've been aiming too long!" Kirillov shouted impetuously. "Fire! Fire!"
But the shot rang out, and this time Stavrogin's white beaver hat flew off. The aim had been fairly correct. The crown of the hat was pierced very low down, a quarter of an inch lower, and all would have been over. Kirillov picked up the hat and handed it to Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch.
"Fire! Don't detain your adversary!"
cried Mavriky Nikolaevich in extreme agitation, seeing that Stavrogin seemed to have forgotten to fire and was examining the hat with Kirillov. Stavrogin started, looked at Gaganov, turned round, and this time, without the slightest regard for punctilio, fired to one side into the copse. The duel was over. Gaganov stood as though overwhelmed. Mavriky Nikolaevich went up and began saying something to him, but he did not seem to understand. Kirillov took off his hat as he went away and nodded to Mavriky Nikolaevich. But Stavrogin forgot his former politeness. When he had shot into the copse, he did not even turn towards the barrier. He handed his pistol to Kirillov and hastened towards the horses. His face looked angry. He did not speak. Kirillov, too, was silent. They got on their horses and set off at a gallop.